This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, this is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. Bungo, also known as the Village Above the Clouds, is located in Sarawak and was renowned for its beauty and scenic views atop a hill. But the construction of a dam only left the area with flooded homes, memories and dreams. Unlocking Bungo is a 2016 film which presents the true cost of relocation that three Indigenous families had to endure in the name of development. So this week in our ongoing Stay Home and Watch series, done in collaboration with the Freedom Film Network, I'm going to be speaking to the director of Unlocking Bungo, Nova Goh, who is also a filmmaker. Welcome, Nova. How are you today?
Hello, good afternoon. I'm Nova Goh. I'm the filmmaker who made the Unlocking Bungo short documentary. Yeah, it will be my pleasure. I can attend this quite significant interview section. Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you so much for joining me, Nova. And yes, this is a 2016 film. So yeah, you made it quite a few years ago, but we want to find out more about it. Before we get to that, though, I know that you grew up in Kuching, am I correct?
Yep. I'm growing up in Kuching City, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But you studied in Taiwan, and I think you lived there for 10 years. Tell me, how did filmmaking become something that you were interested in?
Actually, I'm quite interested in art, drawing, during when I'm still a kid something, but I think when I 15 years old, mm-hmm. you know the director, very famous one, Chai Ming-liang.
Yes.
Yeah, Chai Ming-liang. Actually, Chai Ming-liang is original from Kuching.
Okay.
So after he won the award in the Berlin and his film, so after he conducted a seminar in my school, in my high school, because he's my senior. So after that, after I attend the seminar, actually it's quite inspired me because I start to find out even people come from a small town, actually he can be, try in the international film festival and the world. So actually it's really inspired me to further my art hobby, develop into a film career. Yes. That's why I also follow his step. I study further in the Taiwan. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's so interesting. You just never know who's going to inspire you and change the course of your life. One talk in your school, right? And that was it. Your future set out for you.
Well, that's why we have to bury a word for our talking or our work. Maybe
who knows who you'll inspire. And you spent 10 years there, right? In Taiwan, you lived and worked there for about 10 years besides studying.
Yes. After my 4 years university are in the National Taiwan University of Art. So I stayed there another 6 years in Taiwan to develop my film career, yes.
Okay, all right. And then when you came back to Malaysia, I understand you didn't go, did you go back to Sarawak or did you, and then you moved to Sabah, something along those lines?
Actually, in the 2008, I come back to Sarawak, stayed for 2 years. So after that, in the 2010, I moved to Sabah, yes.
Okay, and that's where you're based now?
Yeah, I'm based in Kota Kinabalu now.
Okay, yeah. All right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is, of course, a film about, things happening in the interiors of Sarawak, right? And I'm just curious, as a boy growing up in Kuching, were you aware of, were you conscious of all these different events happening in and around Sarawak, that were affecting the indigenous communities?
Actually, not really. Because I'm Chinese and most of the time stay in the Chinese community. So we are very adventurous into the indigenous people's community.
Okay.
Now we look into the location of the Bungo. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's not so far from city. It's just only 40 kilometers from the Kuching city. Actually, that's quite near, but
yeah.
But actually, it remains totally unknown for us.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And because even it's just 40 kilometers from the Kuching City, but actually that is not easy to lead to the Bungo. Mm-hmm. You have to take 2 hour car and then you have to take the boat and then you have to hike for the 6 hour.
Yeah. This was before the dam, of course, right? After that.
Before the dam, yes.
Yeah. Okay. And that was really interesting. I think, I mean, those are things that also come up in the film, right? The journey to get there, even though it's so close to the city and Kuching is so, you know, developed, you know, and, but yet, you know, you're living side by side and all these different things are happening. And you, I guess, you know, people weren't really aware of what was happening to the folks living in that area.
Yes, yes.
Okay. All right. Why were you interested in Bengal Valley? You know, how, what drew you to this place and what drew you to telling the story about this place?
Actually, it started from the 2015. I think it's around September. My very close friend who called me that, hey, do you have an interest to go for a hiking trip?
Okay.
Hiking. So you say it's a very significant, is about, is we will travel to the village above the cloud and we can discover the last few remaining Ling Lady. That's actually, it triggered my curiosity and I would like to travel to the place. But when I arrive to the, I mean, there's a, how do you say, there's a the PR point. There's the PR point. So actually the tour guide will come to pick us. Then suddenly I saw the dam.
The dam, okay.
Yeah, I saw the dam and I start to feel something, there's right. Something wrong. There's not quite unusual. I mean, I feel like why there's a dam, and after that we have a boat ride and we start have a, that time we still have 4 hour hiking in the Resamban, and then in the Bengal Samban village I found out actually the village already abandoned. There's no people around and I couldn't find any the last Ling Lady something. So I start to ask the tour guide, I say what exactly happened. So he told me about the story about the, because the dam built, yeah, so the people have to move to the resettlement.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's how the story started. And I start to dig more and more and more. And then I found out, actually, there's still a few village. Yeah, still have around 200 family housing that's still insist they don't want to move out. Yeah, so they start, they're still something like, they have a kind of life very interesting. I mean, there's kind of like they couldn't have any support, like electricity, they couldn't have any water. So they have to figure out how to solve this, the basic thing, yeah. So that's why I start to check in and study and more, until the world is unbuilt to there, yes.
Okay. And I mean, there's so much that, you know, you bring up in the film, but I mean, you specifically talk to, I think it's three feature quite prominently, right? Can you tell us about, you know, these three main characters? So I think it's Simo Sakam, Peluk Ape and Sagin Adan, right? I mean, how did you meet them? Why is it that you wanted to tell their story?
Actually, the Sagin is the first person I met because he's a tall guy. Actually, he earned the living is depend on the tourism. Yeah. Uh-huh. That's why he brought me into the Sembang, the Bengal Dam. That's the first character I met.
Right.
So after that, you know, the tall guy, they always would like to make more income. So he asked me that, do you like to visit the resettlement? Because the last Ling Lady still stay. Now they are listed, they are moved to the resettlement. Do you like to visit them? So actually, after that, he bring me to the resettlement.
Right. So these are the families who were forced to move from the ancestral land, right?
Yeah, they agreed to move.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So after that, I interview and visit the Ling Lady. I feel that it's not enough. I want something behind. I think there is something is not correct. How to say that? There is something behind. So that's why I start to further and deep more. And then I found out there's still a few. They still have a three village that's still in the Bengal range. Yeah, that's why I started another journey. I went back to the press and yeah, that's how it started. Yeah. That's why I start to meet up with Mr. Simon. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah. And so that was Simo and this Peluk, right? Peluk Ape.
Yeah, Peluk Ape, yes.
Okay, all right. So, okay, let's just go for one quick break, Nova. And then when we come back, let's talk about, you know, what it is that those three, you know, shared with you, you know, in the documentary film. I'm speaking today to Nova Goh. He's a filmmaker and he's also the director of Unlocking Bungo, which is a 2016 film which relives the people's struggle in Bungo Valley since they relocated because a dam was built, you know, on their ancestral lands. We'll find out more after this quick break. You're listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. BFM 89.9.
Yes, my old village is down this hill. Everything is no more there because covered by the water. I still remember where is my house and where is the school compound and where is the community hall and then where is my cousin built their house before. So we are very peaceful and enjoy in the life on that time. But now, when we are separate into two, it's quite different now because we never meet with our cousin and never meet with them who are moving to Bungo Resettlement Scheme.
In Seman old village, is even we don't have money, we still have something. Even we don't work for 1 month, 2 months, is no problem. We still have something to eat. And we are always happy because we are, what Malay says, we bebas. Bebas, yes, going for hunting, going for fishing, and going to collecting the jungle products.
Kita dah tahu, kita pindah sini, bukan pindah kehendak kita sendiri, bukan. Ini kita pindah oleh kerajaan. Sepatut kawasan ini ya, kerajaan menentukan kawasan ini adalah balik hak kita, tanah asal kita, bawa ke sini. Tapi akhirnya sekarang kita tidak tahu, bukan ini hak kita lagi. Tiba-tiba, kerajaan katakan orang di sini lagi orang setinggan, sudah. Tapi dalam arahan kerajaan sekarang, itulah penghapusan hak tanah adat ini ada. Dalam perjanjian, bila kita sudah terima harta ini ataupun gangguan ataupun pembahasan ini, berarti hak kita hapus di tempat tanah asal. Mungkinlah dihapus sudah. Karena di sini ada penghapusan hak tanah adat. Tapi kita sudah sign.
Welcome back. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs. It's another episode of our Stay Home and Watch series done in collaboration with the Freedom Film Network, where we revisit all films that fell under the Freedom Film Network's Freedom Film Fest winners and all the films that were created under there. So today I'm speaking to Nova Goh, who's a filmmaker and the director of Unlocking Bungo, which is a 2016 film focused on Bungo Valley and the struggle of the people who were relocated from the area because of a dam that was built there. You know, it involves things like native customary land rights. So many issues were brought up. So Nova, you know, before the break, you told us about those three main characters that you spoke to, right? Yes. Can you tell me what it is that they shared with you? Because they offer very different perspectives and some of it's similar. Maybe you can explain what it is that they spoke about in the film.
Okay, we can see actually there's two lies. One lie is from the perspective of the tall guy, mm-hmm. Shagun. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and one we can see actually it's from the Simo. Mm-hmm. So for the Sagan and the, also the Peluk, they mm-hmm. accept the offer for the relocation. So they gave up their essential land, so that they moved to the resettlement.
Yeah.
So that's what we can see. There's one lie. Then the another lie, Simo, Mr. Simo, he chose the very difficult journey. Very difficult because he want to continue to stay in the village, but he have go through an 8 years court case.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
To win back the indigenous, yeah, the
native land. Customary land rights.
Yes, that's why. Yeah.
Okay.
So we can see these two comparisons. So one, they're choosing an easy way. Yeah, you pay me, I give you my land. Mm. And another one, I refuse to move out. But you have to start from nothing. Mm. You have to try to figure out how you have to access the water and the electricity. And also, you have to move all your kampong to the higher place.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, you have to rebuild. Yeah, that's quite a very, very difficult process. I mean,
yeah.
How you gonna do? You have to replant your produce like rice and, you know, gardening, and you have to start everything from zero. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And I think, you know, all three of them share different struggles that they went through, because even those who relocated, yes, they were given homes. Yes, they were given land. But, you know, I think they traditionally grew pepper, isn't it? But the land was not suitable. Yeah. So they couldn't grow the pepper, you know. And I think some of them said that, you know, when they lived, you know, back in the village where the lands were fertile and everything was good, they never had to worry. You know, life was a lot easier. But now it's a struggle. Am I correct?
Yeah, I'm correct. Yes, correct. Because if you look into the film, Mr. Seymour, he speak a very important word. He say, "Ikan tawa cannot live into the cannot live in sea, and the sea fish cannot live in the ikan tawa."
The fresh water, right? Yeah.
So we can see the struggle is for the Sagan and the Balog. They choose an easy way, but actually that is not that easy, because you move to somewhere near the city and the land actually is not fertilized. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the crop is not going well. So then how? You have to facing the urban people's problem. Mm-hmm. Because before you stay into the mountain, you have to, you don't need to pay for the water, for the, you know, actually the basic expense is quite low. But then you move to a city, when the crop and the body and the pepper is not going well, you have to start thinking, probably you have to get a job in the city.
Yeah.
But they don't have much education. They even couldn't speak very well Malay.
Mm.
So once you move into the city, you try to get a job, what kind of job you will have? Of course, it's some kind of low labor,
walking
cars, and the pay actually is not decent. It's not good enough for you.
Yeah.
And every month you have to pay this, to pay that. So it end up nothing. So they start to feel actually the life is not that easy for them. Yeah, because you have to adapt into the urban people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's something happen if you ask the urban people, they move to the kampong, they move into the forest to have some kind of life like the kampong people, also very tough. Because you have to self-sufficient,
yeah.
You have to try to planting, you have to try to hunting, you try to be Sabra into the deep forest. I think that's not easy for us also. So that is what we see. That's a very different perspective. So for the Mr. Seymour, he start very difficult but he's lucky he have some help from the NGO like Light Up Borneo.
Mm-hmm.
So the Light Up Borneo actually helped them to build a mini hydro in the waterfall.
Right.
So the waterfall actually generate the electricity. So they start to have the power.
Right.
Yeah. So that's why how to improve their life.
Mm-hmm.
And also the Mr. Seymour, he have a dream, he have a big vision. So he start to plant the like Mao San King Durian, you know, different fruits. So he have a vision. He want to develop the Bengal into an ecotourism location.
Okay.
So he's doing quite well. Yeah. So actually now the Bengal land become quite famous, and it become a hidden gem for the Kuching people. It's something a new tourist attraction in the Kuching backyard. Yeah, I think he is quite doing well. And the way they're doing the ecotourism is quite interesting, because they try to deliver the green message. Yeah, the green.
Mm-hmm.
How if you follow their package, they will bring you the waterfall. Yeah, they bring you the waterfall, but actually they will try to make you experience the Bidayu traditional life experience.
Right.
So actually they will just bring the chicken meat and some body rice. That's all. Then they bring you to the waterfall. But during the journey, during the adventure, they will chop some bamboo, and some duhao. It's a kind of wild ginger in Borneo.
Okay.
Yeah. So you can enjoy the waterfall. Then at the same time, they cook they cook the chicken and the rice in the bamboo. So after you're done, you have a very, very wonderful like waterfall, happy Mandi. So after that, you can enjoy the feast.
Right.
So you can enjoy the, we say is a ayam mandok, is a bamboo chicken, and yeah, everything is quite natural. Then after you finish the meal, you actually you don't produce any rubbish. The bamboo and everything, they can give back to the nature. That's quite inspiring. I mean, yeah.
That's that whole concept of zero waste that we talk so much about, isn't it? Everything from the land and back to the land, no waste created. That's amazing. And
that's quite actually, that's quite inspiring, because we think that zero waste something is a new idea. But actually, when you look back into their ancestor way, actually they already practiced for 1,000 years.
For sure, yeah. It's all about going back to the basics, yeah. Yeah, no. I mean, I'm happy to hear that, you know, you mentioned he's doing quite well and he's got this ecotourism thing going. Okay, that's excellent to hear. But, you know, I mean, this is interesting also, right? I mean, speaking about environmental issues as well, I think the film also highlights how energy demand is linked to, you know, these sorts of environmental and social conflicts, isn't it? Because we saw that in the film as well that, you know, a mega dam like this also caused the water to be stagnant, the fish died. And as you said, saltwater fish can't go into freshwater and vice versa. So fish were dying, isn't it? They didn't know what to do, where to go. And that was a loss of life right there.
Yes. So it will be easy if we just only blame the government why you want to make this decision and to make the land flood and the people have to relocate to the... There's the cause for the natural, because you have to... But after a few years, I made this film, I look into this again. I have a very different feeling and idea. I mean, okay. I think we cannot simply say, oh, blame the government, why you want to do this, do that, and to cause all the problems. This is very lazy way, because easy. But if you look really into the problem, actually there's the main problem is a human being. We have the demand, the desire to want more resources from the nature. I think that's the main problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the dam, it's just a result for the people, the population getting more, and we have to develop more land to get more resources. So let's think into this, like, if this is the only way we can get the resources to develop the land, no matter how to build the housing, to build the land or mega dam for this is the only way we can do this. Or probably we can have the alternative way. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
To get a resource, but in more sustainability or more smart way. Because in the 2019, I traveled to the Israel,
mm-hmm.
the Middle East.
Okay.
I found this country is quite interesting because they have not much water.
Okay.
I mean, in the whole year, the landing season just only 2 weeks. So the 2 weeks is not raining, the whole country will be suffer.
Okay.
But the country, as we know, actually the country is covered with a desert and the wild wilderness. There's not much further land for them to plant the crop and to produce the fruit, something. But it's very surprising they provide their 40% of the olive to the Euro market.
Mm.
How they make it? They have not fertilized land. They have not enough water.
Mm.
How they can achieve this? So after I asked the people around and they told me because they use the water very smart. Yeah, they use the technology to make the water fully authorized, to watering the crop, to watering the olive, That's why they can make this. So when you look into our country, the water for us is not an issue because we have too much water, even fire everywhere now, right? Yeah. So, but once the resources is too easy to get, you have no idea how to appreciate the water, the resources. You actually, the most of the time we are waste water. So we not really think into this. So after that, we found out the population is going, our water is not enough, so we have to debit out the land, we have to chase out the indigenous people, and we have to do this. But we don't have an education, or we don't have the another thinking. Actually, we are enough for the water. That's the way we have to educate the people how to smart to use the water. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or do we have a more smart system? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to use the water, like the Japan, where I traveled the film festival in Japan. I found they are very smart. Yeah, they use the water, and yeah, the water can be reused, recycled, and yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's interesting. And I do have to disagree with you a little bit because, you know, the government also know these things, right? So they could actually invest in these sorts of smart technologies. But, you know, mega dams also mean mega bucks, right? So there's also, you know, we've heard of these issues happening. So I think it's a bit of both, personally, I feel, you know, that there is not to say that they are blameless in this situation. But yeah, here we are. I'm just curious, you know, when the film came out, right, what sort of reaction did it get from people? You know, were they surprised that all of this was happening? You know, just as you said, 40 kilometers away from Kuching?
I think for the Kuching people, the first thing come out is actually it's not an environment issue.
Okay.
Because for the people that they found there's a new tourist attraction.
Okay.
That is more for the people actually it's more easy to accept the tourist attraction.
Okay.
Instead of like there's a I think there's the somehow is our education something we don't really aware for this kind of environment issue. Yeah.
Okay. All right. And you've gone back since the film was made. Have you made a trip back to visit Simo and all of them?
Yeah, so I go back. So I experience. I would like to see their result. So that's why I participate. Yeah, their package and something I'm fully to explain this. Yeah.
Okay.
And also we would like to promote this more to the Kuching people so they can explain in the soil, yes.
Okay. All right. And he's doing, as you mentioned, he's doing pretty all right.
Yeah, he's doing pretty all right, yes.
Okay, excellent. And what about Peluk and Sagan? Did you keep in touch with them? You know, do you know what's happening with them in the resettlement?
I'm not really in touch with the Sagan, but after the unlocking Bengal, we developed the Unlocking Bengal into a long feature documentary. It's called The Last Ring Lady. So actually there's the story about the struggle of the last few remaining ring lady.
Right.
How they access and adopt to the modern world. And then we are very lucky that this documentary actually, we win the opportunity to co-production with NHK Japan and the KBS Korea. So after this documentary, Peluk become very famous.
Okay.
The Sarawak Tourism Board appoint her travel to the German to attend the Indigenous People Festival or something. She become an icon, I think.
Okay. Yep. All right. That's good to hear. So they're doing all right then. But I guess, you know, like when you made the film, you know, what was it that you were hoping people would take away from it? And you know, somebody who's coming to watch the film today, maybe, you know, in 2022's context, what do you hope they will take away from it?
Okay. The first thing we tackle is the environment issue.
Mm-hmm.
But after a few years, yeah, actually I'm trying to deliver to the audience, like, can you see the system in the film? The system, because like, what we feature the Mr. Seymour is how they build a new system. Yeah, how they build a new system and not necessarily to depend on the water, electricity, you know, like what we do now.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have to pay the water, we have to pay the electricity. Yeah. That is how we get the resources from there. We just pay the bill. That is the way, right?
But yeah. But
when we see the Mr. Seymour, they get the water from the mountain water, and then get the electricity from the mini hydro. Yeah, actually, that's a kind of sustainability way.
Mm.
They can survive without have to pay the bill. Yeah. And then actually, it really inspired me. Like, it's like we are the urban people. Can we like to build a system, right? If you can have a solar panel, or if you can have a water quarry system, solve this kind of sort of thing. So is this kind of thing, it can implement into the urban people. Actually, we can save a lot of energy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, the film is not hearing this so much thing in the film, but that's just after so many years, I'm thinking the solution. Because it feels very empty. If you throw the problem, you saw a problem in the film, we have this kind of environment problem and blah, blah, blah. Then you don't give any solution.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think there's not a good way.
Mm. Okay, so think about solutions, right? Look at the issues and think of how we can solve these problems pretty much.
Yes, in a more creative way. Yeah, we have to think about, can we invent into a more creative way, more efficient way to use the resources? Because now it's not just happening in the Borneo. You see, now actually is the climate change. Actually, it's the war situation now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I guess, Nova, you know, as a filmmaker and you know, dealing with such, I mean, it's quite sensitive topics, isn't it? Did you feel any sort of responsibility as the filmmaker? You know, how did you feel about the role you played in making this film? And the role you played in making this film and, you know, getting that message out to the public?
Actually, I'm so lucky. Like, I can travel to different indigenous people, press, and, you know, as a documentary filmmaker, the best part is you can participate the different people life.
Mm-hmm.
So for us, that's quite interesting, because as a Malaysian, if you are Indian, if you are Chinese, you are Malay, actually, you're just living in your comfort zone, living in your community. And then you have no idea about how is the other people going on, but you try to very simply judge the other people. That's not fair, yeah? Because like us, we have a lot of prejudice before we really entering into their life.
Yeah.
After a few weeks, we are stay with them to understand their life situation. So after that, I found actually, we are not really, how to say, subjection. We are not really, yeah, you got what I mean, right?
Yeah,
that's.
Okay, so I mean, as your role as a filmmaker, basically, you had the opportunity to enter into the lives of these people, find out more, and show that, you know, to other people who are also, you know, unfamiliar or don't know what's happening, right? Just to kind of break out of your comfort zone, as you said.
Yeah, because now we have a very serious, like the last issue, you know, like the racism, and that is caused by the. We are not really understanding each other. But if you give yourself an opportunity entering their community to stay with them for a few weeks, then you jog. Yeah. But if you want to jog, then you have to stay with them. Or you cannot, you just keep silent and please don't say something bad to the people you don't really understand. Yes.
Okay. So try and put your... Try and live a day in their shoes, right? Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much, you know, for joining me today. Any last message you'd like to leave? Anything at all you'd like listeners to hear about why they should come and watch Unlocking Bengo? Anything at all?
So I would like to say, as a Malaysian, we are too lucky to have a abundance of the resources. But try to imagine if one day you couldn't get the water, you couldn't get the electricity, because so we cannot wait until this thing happens. We have to start thinking now. Yeah, that's why. Can we have a creative way? Yeah, that's why I try to tell the people. Yes.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, I do hope lots of people go and watch Unlocking Bungo. It's only about, it's less than half an hour, you know, and there's so much, you know, that's inside that story itself. And it'll give you a good sort of insight into what's happening in the interiors in Sarawak. So yes, it's a wonderful film to watch. Do catch it. If you'd like to find, if you'd like to watch it, you just need to head to the Freedom Film Network's YouTube channel. It's available there. And my thanks again to you, Nova, for joining me today.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for the invite. Yeah.
Okay. I've been speaking to Nova Goh. He's a filmmaker and the director of Unlocking Bungo. If you miss any part of our conversation or any previous Live and Learn interviews, you can always search for the podcast at bfm.my/learn, or you can find it on the BFM app. This has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Ikan di laut yang mau pergi ke sungai air tawar. Sungai di laut pergi ke air tawar memang tidak dapat hidup. Dan ikan di air tawar pergi ke laut memang tidak dapat hidup sebab air laut masin. Begitu juga kehidupan kami di kawasan ini. Kami yang tidak boleh hidup di bandar, kami pilih hidup di kampung.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.